Hello and welcome to Historical Hysteria. My name is Nicholas Ward, and today we are exploring the myth of the Last Samurai. This will be our final episode on the myths of Japan. So today we will explore one of the last and greatest of those myths, the myth of the Last Samurai. Following the forced opening of Japan in 1854, the shogun and many samurai could not bear the modernization of Japan and rose up against the tide of industrialization, sparking the Boshin War. When modernity triumphed over tradition, armed with bow and sword, samurai rode out against rifles and cannons and were dramatically obliterated. But with the war over, the legendary general Saigo Takamori, friend and tutor of the emperor, looked at the destruction in disgust and retired south to the city of Kagoshima to train samurai. He lived a quiet life until 1876, when the emperor, misled by greedy advisors, outlawed the samurai and banned the carrying of swords. Takamori, leading a deputation of pupils armed with swords, dressed in traditional armor, marched north with a letter to beg his former pupil to change his mind, only to be met by machine guns and artillery, dying in the hills of his home, last true samurai. If this sounds familiar, it's because Saigo Takamori is in large part the basis of Ken Watanabe's character in the movie The Last Samurai. Now, what I have just told you is more of a European myth brought back following the Boshin War, and is pretty much entirely incorrect. But Japan also has many myths from this period. After the opening of Japan in 1854, tensions in the nation rose. Faith in the Tokugawa shogun was greatly damaged, and over the next decade, many clans, most notably the Satsuma and Choshu, began advocating a return to imperial rule and provoking conflicts with the shogunate. And in 1867, the shogun retired his position. However, the Tokugawa was still the most powerful family in the nation, and the state apparatus was still completely loyal to them. The Boshin War started dramatically when, on January 3rd, 1868, forces loyal to the Satsuma and Choshu clans seized Kyoto and the 15-year-old emperor, who shortly declared a renewal of his imperial power. This was the Meiji Restoration. The now former shogun marched 15,000 troops on Kyoto to present a letter to the emperor. This force was attacked and driven back by the Choshu and Satsuma armies. Following the battle, more clans joined the now imperial army and quickly seized Osaka and burned its castle to the ground. The shogunate forces went into full flight, and in short order, most of the country had risen in revolt against the Tokugawa. The Tokugawa would lose their capital Edo, modern-day Tokyo, just a few months later. And in July 1868, following the Battle of Ueno, the last shogun, Yoshinobu Tokugawa, was captured and imprisoned. Holdouts of the shogunate order would continue resistance for another year, briefly establishing a separate state on the northern island of Hokkaido, but ultimately losing. The Boshin War was a hotbed for European observers in both the shogunate and imperial forces. Artists, writers, soldiers, and merchants returned home with stories of the last samurai, gallantly facing down machine gun fire in their armor, swords drawn, unflinching. Art and stories in Japan also promoted this kind of dramatic ideal of modernity versus tradition, and since then, the Boshin War has and often still is presented as this war between modernity and tradition. The only problem is, that's complete nonsense. While the imperial forces were generally better armed than the shogunate forces were also armed with guns, not swords. The cause of the war can be confusing, but very basically, though the shogun had abdicated his position in 1867, many feared that the shogunate and its allies would simply take a back seat for a year or two while building strength, and then re-seize the emperor, which was a very, very valid fear. The Tokugawa were the richest and most powerful family, they could command the most men, and if it came down to a fight between who could outspend whom, the Tokugawa were going to win. So even without controlling the emperor, the ex-shogun was still the power of Japan. However, because of the many conflicting interests the shogun had to juggle, modernization, especially within the army, was very slow. So by 1868, the shogun only had a small corps of modern trained and equipped infantry. It was this weakness the Choshu and Satsuma clans managed to exploit. But there is more wrong with this conflict than you might think. Again, while the shogun is generally represented as the force of the old ways and tradition and the emperor modernity, this is the wrong way round. The shogun was the one who opened Japan and began modernizing Japan. The emperor and his allies, meanwhile, tried to close it again. In 1863, the emperor commanded the expulsion of all barbarians, which the shogun just ignored, but which triggered a wave of xenophobic attacks across Japan, which triggered Western reprisals. And when the shogun fled from Osaka in 1868, all foreign representatives recognized him, not the emperor, as the legitimate government, even though technically the Shogun had retired. Once the war turned and the Imperium was back, foreign governments would only recognize the Emperor after the Emperor reluctantly agreed to stop this whole kill all foreigners business, which completely throws the myth of the Boshin War on its head, with the Shogun being the force of modernity, being forced out by the traditionalist Emperor, who only embraces modernity unwillingly. But that's also not quite accurate. While the Shogun began an aggressive campaign of modernization in the 1860s, it was too late. This was partly because the Choshu and Satsuma, key imperial allies, had begun their own modernization campaigns, investing heavily in the latest military equipment. In 1864, an expedition against the Choshu was launched with devastating losses for the Shogunate, forcing the Shogun to reluctantly make concessions to the clan while desperately trying to modernize his army. Because the conflict was complex and not simply tradition on one side and modernity on the other, following the end of the Boshin War, the new imperial government took the drastic step of doing exactly what the Shogunate government had been doing. And here is where Saigo Takamori enters the story. Saigo was a samurai of the Satsuma clan. He almost single-handedly caused and then won the Boshin War for the Emperor, and after many years of dutiful service, he retired to the city of Kagoshima to train a new generation of samurai. But in 1876, the Emperor abolished the samurai as a class. Saigo was devastated. In 1877, about 1,000 of Saigo's students demanded he lead them to present a letter to the Emperor. Saigo reluctantly marched north with about 20,000 ex-samurai, many carrying swords and wearing traditional armor, only to be met by a massive imperial army. Saigo's force would be steadily driven back till they reached the hills of Kagoshima, where Saigo would commit seppuku, and his men, in a desperate last defiance against the Emperor, would charge, swords drawn, and be killed. So died the last true samurai. So the first issue with that story is the letter. Though Saigo would repeatedly insist otherwise, the idea of presenting a letter to the Emperor was often a code phrase for a coup. However, given the close relationship between the Emperor and Saigo, it is often presented that he did want to just present a letter to the Emperor. But, you know, with 20,000 armed samurai to carry his bags. Just like when the Tokugawa marched on Kyoto, they were just totally trying to present a letter to the Emperor. The second problem is the incredible end of the story, when the samurai charge, swords drawn, and are cut down by rifle fire. That part is actually mostly true, but the legend has spiraled out of control to imply that Saigo's entire army were armed with swords and spears. It's the basis for the film The Last Samurai, and as you probably guessed, it's a myth. Saigo's Samurai Academy, which, side note, sounds like the next summer's best anime, wasn't shying away from teaching students modern warfare. And when the government started asking, hey, about that army you seem to be amassing down there, what's up with that? Saigo's students responded by kidnapping and torturing police and raiding government arsenals. Saigo's 20,000 samurai, though some were in armor, were also armed to the teeth with rifles when they marched north. Modern rifles. While the abolition of the samurai classes did trigger some uprisings, what triggered the Satsuma Rebellion was more the abolition of grain stipends for samurai families. You can take my honor, you can take my way of life, but you will never take my grain stipends. Unfortunately, as incredibly interesting as the Boshin War and Satsuma Rebellion are, there were no dramatic battles between sword-wielding samurai warriors and modern infantry, except a handful of basically desperate last charges. The closest event to this clash of tradition with modernity was in 1863 with the punitive expedition against the Choshu by the Shogunate. The Shogun dispatched over 100,000 soldiers, but only a tiny fraction had modern arms or training. The Choshu had only a few thousand soldiers, but were armed to the teeth with state-of-the-art European weaponry, and absolutely massacred the Shogunate forces. Although even the most outdated of the Shogunate forces wouldn't have been wielding spears, but rather arquebuses and muskets. Unfortunately, as romantic as this period in history is presented, it was just a humdrum power struggle, with the occasional suicide by sword charge. In short order, the Japanese will rapidly industrialize, winning their first international war in 1885 against China before rapidly exploding onto the world stage as one of the great powers in 1905. Japan's sudden rise and unique culture have given rise to many, many myths, some harmless and others less so, as people around the world sometimes struggle to understand the people and the nation. While I certainly don't claim to have some great understanding about, well, anything really, I hope these last few episodes have helped to demystify some aspects of Japan. and even a little demonstrated that for all their quirks, the Japanese are not mystical mountain men with magic swords and mystic wisdom, but just people. There's so much more about Japan that I would love to cover, and so much more that I would love to learn about, from Japan's warrior women to the Mongol invasion to black teeth and the tale of Genji. But I am also just about to hit 13,000 words and 5 episodes on this crash course on Japanese myths, and I think if I did even a single, if I did even one more episode, I would not blame everyone for just immediately never listening to this podcast again. I will, of course, come back to Japan sometime in the future, at the very least to explore the many, many myths of World War II. But for now, this is the end of our very brief crash course on the myths of Japan, on the most popular myths of Japan. If I missed your favorite Japanese myth, why not tweet it to @manichistorian or post it on r/historicalhysteria on Reddit. And as always, feedback can be sent to historicalhysteria@gmail. And that, sadly, is all we have time for. But before I leave, let me leave you with this. On his last day, Saigo Takamori sat in a small cave on the outskirts of his hometown, listening to the sound of the cannon fire growing closer. He turned to his closest friends and comrades gathered around him, knowing escape was impossible, and said, "My life is yours." The small cadre of officers made one desperate break for freedom. Most were cut down by rifle fire. Saigo took a bullet in his side. Saigo had tried to fight back to Kagoshima, his home. They were so close the smoke from the fires of the city could be seen in the air over the mountaintops. His close friend Beppu Shinsuke helped him commit seppuku before fastening his armor, taking a sword, and charging the rifles of the Imperial Army. They were just a few kilometers from Saigo's Samurai Academy, where they had taken up their arms and marched north. Just a few weeks. Bye.